February 15th, 1990, and we are in the study of the Adoniram Synagogue in East End, Pittsburgh, PA. This is tape two, side number three. We're interviewing again Rabbi Morris Landis for the Pittsburgh National Council of Jewish Women Oral History. This is Harold Kimmel and Harold Braun. And to test our tape, would you please give us the name and address of this synagogue, Rabbi?
The name of the synagogue is Congregation Adat Jeshurun, and it's in East Liberty Boulevard on the corner of North St. Clair Street.
Good. Okay.
Rabbi, you mentioned that you acquired a PhD and that you had some continuing education at Harvard and a dropsy. I wonder if you'd talk about both all of that for a moment.
Well, insofar as that is concerned, the caliber of Harvard was very high. I was in the my major at...
When were you at Harvard?
What's that?
When did you go to Harvard?
Went to Harvard in, let's see, from 41 to 40. It was about 42, mm-hmm. 1942. Mm-hmm. I was an English major in at Yeshiva College, mm-hmm. and when I went to Harvard, I was still in English literature, mm-hmm. and I took courses in English literature, mm-hmm. and as I say, the caliber was very high. Incidentally, the caliber at Yeshiva University was just as high. And then from there, when I became rabbi in Lancaster, I went to Dropsy College, and they were the top men in their field, which was cognate languages. The cognate languages, of course, the languages similar to Hebrew. And I had some of the top men in the country there, Dr. Solomon at Zeitlin. I had Israel Ephros. I had Gaster, Theodore Gaster. Mm-hmm. Now, these were top men in their field. Theodore Gaster was, of course, in comparative religion, mainly Eastern cultures, the Mideastern cultures, really. Ephros was in philosophy, and Zeitlin was, I suppose, the top-notch a scholar in his day, maybe for many days, mm-hmm. The Second Commonwealth, Second Jewish Commonwealth. He was able to refute a lot of people's theories. I won't mention the names, but some of the top rated men in the country or in the world, and he was able to refute them because of the simple reason that he knew the Talmud backwards and that they did not, and he could show that at the time this was not so. But nevertheless, he was not recognized because he was usually just one voice crying out in the wilderness. And oddly enough, people figure out how many professionals are lined up on one side and how many on the other, and they go through the majority. Mm-hmm. And his point was, if I've got the right, one by myself is sufficient.
That's a theory that's always being argued about. Who's right?
Mm-hmm.
The one who's right or the majority?
For example, this was later after I had left there, mm-hmm. but he's one of the people who definitely thought that the Dead Scroll, the Dead Sea Scrolls were not as early as people have said that they were. And personally, I agree with him.
But you mean they're not 100 B.C.?
No. First of all, they said that it was plus or minus 200.
Yeah.
So if you go plus, then mm-hmm. it would be near what he said.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that's it. But he did it from the basis of internal mm-hmm. study. Mm-hmm. The Dead Sea Scrolls, for example, he mm-hmm. said, and I agree with him because I've read some of the mm-hmm. Scrolls, were written by a semi-literate person, mm-hmm. not... Mm-hmm. And he believes that they were written in the Middle Ages, early Middle Ages, but in the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason is, the way I can see it, is that they have the biblical text, they have the text as it is in the Masoretic mm-hmm. text now. And
It didn't come about till Italy.
What's that?
It was the Italian Jews who put together the Masoretic.
No, the Masoretic test was put together in the time of Rabbi Akiva, which was in the second century. I mean, the Bible, setting the Bible
yes.
as it
yeah.
was.
Okay.
Yeah, but was largely in the time of
yeah.
Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah, I thought I knew.
So in any event, and before Rabbi mm-hmm. Akiva, there is a controversy between Rabbi Yehoshua and
mm-hmm.
Rabbi Eliezer
mm-hmm.
as to... actually, Yeshem LeMikra, Yeshem LeMasoris, that's what the,
mm-hmm.
they refer to it, but actually it is when you do put a vav like in a word, or when you do not put a vav in the word. And that was a controversy in the early part of the second century.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Common Era.
Yes.
The Dead Sea Scrolls have the way that we read it now,
yeah.
which means after they had already resolved this.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, definitely the Dead Sea Scrolls are after the time of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua, which would put them at least sometime in the, at the earliest, sometime in the second century.
Mm-hmm.
So far as semi-literate is, in one page, they take the word Zos, which means this,
mm-hmm.
which is spelt in Hebrew, Zion, Aleph, Tough, they spell it three different ways. Once they spell it correctly,
mm-hmm.
once they spell it Zion Vov Tough,
uh-huh.
and once they spell it Zion Vov Zion. So my guess is, and that was Zeitlin's point, that somebody was dictating to whoever the scribe
uh-huh.
was, and the scribe was semi-literate, and therefore sometimes he heard it as
mm-hmm.
Zos,
uh-huh.
and sometimes he heard it this way, and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
That's interesting. I love to spend more time on it from the point of view of my own interest, but I'm not allowed to exploit
yeah.
that. That wouldn't be the point of it. So anyway, you had a bit of this, but how'd you finally decide to go to Pitt?
Well, I moved to Pittsburgh. I took the position in
uh-huh.
Pittsburgh. This is my 42nd year here,
uh-huh.
so I suppose
uh-huh.
it was a move that I should have made. Anyway, so I came to Pittsburgh, and I was just a year away from my doctorate at Dropsy, and I called the president of Dropsy, and he said, "Well, with air travel as it is, you can come in twice a week
uh-huh.
to Dropsy."
Uh-huh.
So, although I was under Ephros and Zeitlin and Gaster, and they all three said, "Okay, you can take courses at Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
and we'll
mm-hmm.
go ahead." But he said, "No, you've got to come in to."
Mm-hmm.
With it. So I wasn't ready to be
mm-hmm.
traveling to Philadelphia
mm-hmm.
twice.
A week.
I for a while I didn't take anything, and then I decided I might as well get my doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
And since my major was medieval philosophy, I contacted Duquesne University, which is a Catholic
mm-hmm.
University. First of all, they weren't giving a doctor at the time, only a master's,
mm-hmm.
and I was interested in getting mm-hmm. my master's.
Yeah.
My doctorate.
Yes.
And besides that, when I spoke to them in the field of medieval philosophy, they said, "You know more than the people that are here in
mm-hmm.
medieval philosophy,
mm-hmm.
so there'd be no sense in your taking
mm-hmm.
courses."
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Pitt, and I checked them out. Their philosophy department was mainly modern philosophy,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't interested in modern
mm-hmm.
philosophy. I was interested in medieval philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into the School of Education,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I got my PhD.
Mm-hmm.
One time I took a course in philosophy of the New Testament,
mm-hmm.
just to see what the philosophy
mm-hmm.
department was, with the head of the department at that time. I won't mention him. His name, because what I'm going to say is not the most flattering for him. But when I used to just talk extemporaneously in class on the New Testament and so forth, he used to flip out a notebook and take notes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wrote four term papers,
mm-hmm.
he asked me if I could keep them because
mm-hmm.
he wants to use them in his
mm-hmm.
courses.
Mm-hmm.
The next time I met him was in the when they had the overview of my thesis,
mm-hmm.
and he gave me a hard time.
mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I don't know whether you've been back any time recently. I took a course last semester,
yeah.
and I'm in a philosophy course now. That is two
yeah.
in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And the two men have been quite good.
Yeah.
Just these are elementary courses.
Mm-hmm. Well, the caliber in this maybe was the School of Education, but the caliber of teaching was what I had experienced in the Boston area, high school level, high school, college level. Yeah. And these and I was working on my PhD, but I got the PhD.
PhD in 54. In education.
Yeah, my major was religious education, but I had to know for my finals. For my final, I had to know all phases: psychology, philosophy, history.
Could you ask? Was it at Pitt you got your degree, or?
Yes.
It was Pitt.
In 54. My thesis was on the. Various opinions of the Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform on the mitzvos maaseos, the practical mitzvahs, rituals of Judaism, like kashrus and so forth.
I've always wondered why our Jewish afternoon school, and I'm taking advantage of the fact that you just said you got your PhD in education, why it hasn't been or couldn't be better. I'm implying, of course, that in my 40, 50 years of peripheral experience, that it's not been good.
Well, I told you previously that I went to an afternoon school.
Yeah.
And their caliber was very good. But you see, you got to put the hours in. We went, at the early grades, we went 5 days a week, an hour and a half each day. Later on, in the last two grades, it was a sixth grade setup, the last two grades, we went 5 days a week, 2 hours each day. And then, towards the very end, we even had courses without writing, of course, on Saturdays. So the teachers themselves were very capable and very knowledgeable. They were, you know, the type that we used to call the masculine. So this is it. So, but you see, what they have done is they've kept whittling away. Now they're down to maybe 2 days a week, an hour each time. So you can't teach anything in that length of time.
I know. Is there any point to it? Is it negative?
Well, I don't know. We did, when we had the school here, we insisted on their coming 3 times a week, and we did go for an hour and a half each time. But even that was not sufficient.
No.
But at least it was better than most of the afternoon.
It seems to me that 3 times a week for a couple of hours each time and a minyan would be the least that would have any affective quality.
Now, see, there was the difference that in our school, we were basically on the cultural, and I'm talking about the Boston area, cultural aspects of Judaism, language, grammar, history, and so forth. They didn't teach. They didn't teach prayer and things like that. It was assumed that your parents would take you to the synagogue, and that was it. So you didn't need to be taught that at school.
Okay, but that isn't the case.
That isn't the case now, which is a problem. Now you have to spend quite a bit of the time in teaching them the prayer book and so forth. Yes.
What I don't have clear is these 5 days a week, 1.5 hours to 2 hours a day, were in Boston?
Revere, Massachusetts, which is a suburb of Boston. Mm-hmm.
And the name of the school?
Kadima was what it was called.
With a K?
K-A-D-I-M-A.
Mm-hmm. Have we ever had a good school here in Pittsburgh?
At one time, when Hebrew Institute was originally started, you did have, they were going 5 days a week, and those that went at that time were, had a good background. My own school here, before I came here, the students went 5 days a week, and they had students studying Talmud. One of them became a rabbi. Several of them went to yeshivas, the higher education schools in New York. So, and all of those who were here at that time, for them to get up before the group and lead in the prayers is nothing.
Yeah. See, I don't count success by whether or not we have a rabbi come out of something occasionally, because that always happens.
What happened is that these people were able to go to a yeshiva and were able to keep up.
Yeah.
For example, some of them were classmates of mine from Pittsburgh, and they were pretty high caliber. As I told you, I had my father, who was a wonderful interpreter of the Talmud, so they may not have had the background that I had, but nevertheless, they were not people who had to be ashamed of their erudition. They were youngsters from youngsters. I was a youngster then too, from my school here, and oddly enough, not from other sections of Pittsburgh, but from my school.
So there were at least a couple of good schools, Hebrew Institute and Adash.
At one time, and then they gradually watered it down, and they couldn't take it. In fact, Hebrew Institute, according to some of the old timers here in the congregation, was originally, when Rabbi Ashinsky, my wife's grandfather, organized it, was originally a day school. And some of them remember when they were going for both secular and Hebrew education to Hebrew Institute. And then Dr. Abrams was the one who changed it from a day school to an afternoon school.
Israel
Abrams. Yes.
Well, one other thing you said that interested me in passing. You said that in your thesis you addressed the practical rituals as they are observed by different
and the philosophy behind
them. I can sense that both you and I'm thinking of Rabbi Milton Steinberg and others of that era, they never felt so far apart from each other. That is, the different religious denominations.
Well, at the time, conservatism, this was, you're talking, when I did my research, I finished my research in 52.
Yes.
54 is when I got my degree, but I finished my research in 52. So at that time, conservatism was not worse than some of the left-wing worse is a bad choice of word, but not different from some of the left-wing orthodox. But conservatism has gradually gone to the left. At that time also there was what was called amongst the reform as a return to orthodoxy, when they reinstituted the bar mitzvah
and Hebrew
in the prayers and so forth. So that, but since that time, in the present time, there's been a centrifugal movement away from the center, and both reform and conservatism have been moving further and further left. In fact, they're getting very close to each other, reform and conservatism.
Very close. I don't know that. I sort of feel more like there were dots on a balloon when you're blowing up the balloon.
Well, what I use sometimes a semicircle, so you'd have three semicircles where one would be the Orthodox on one side, the conservative would overlap its semicircle, would cut across, you know, like this, to the conservative. And and the reform, on the reform side, it would cut across. So there'd be a place in the middle where it was strictly conservative. There would be a place on one side where it was like the left side of orthodoxy, and another space where it was like the right side of reform.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Turn your machine off.
Yes.
You want to record this?
Yeah, we'll record it now. Yes, I really would like us to talk a little bit about the increasing gulf between the denominations and the denominations, that is, those Jews who identify themselves functionally, religiously, by being a member somewhere, and the secular and the simply driftaways. And the emphasis I'm looking for is this: Pittsburgh's been a little different. I don't think we've had the severe, what do you call it, Haredim's and split here as we have had, and the rest, as they have been in other places. What's different about the Pittsburgh Rabbinate that have made them, in my judgment, seemingly more, more accommodating?
Well, let me say this, that usually when you have the big split, it's in a big city like New York or, let us say, Chicago, where people can be more or less in their own enclaves. And therefore, you can live a life to be split. Now, before this, I was in Lynn, in Johnstown, and in Lancaster. You couldn't live in the community without also associating and working together with the Reform rabbi. In those days, there weren't too many conservative rabbis, but, for example, in all three communities, there was only Orthodox and Reform rabbis. So you couldn't manage without working together with them. Now, Pittsburgh is a semi-large city, so therefore Pittsburgh also felt the obligation to work together. And besides that, in Orthodoxy, just like in Reform, you have had a Reform and Conservative, you've been having a veering to the left. In Orthodoxy, you've had, due to the influx of Hasidim after the Holocaust and so forth, you've had a veering to the right in Orthodoxy. And now you do have in Squirrel Hill, for example, not in other parts of the city, but in Squirrel Hill, you have a strictly Orthodox, which would be what you call Haredi, a strictly Orthodox enclave. It would include the Lubavitch, the Nikolel, and some of the others, who really don't mix too much with the other two groups.
I wouldn't call them Orthodox. Dati is what I would call Orthodox. I would call them Haredi.
Well, but I mean, they would not agree with it. Now, for example, what I am mostly is what they call in Israel Dati.
Yes, yeah. I realize that. Yeah. And I would not, I should think you would not concede the term Orthodox.
Well, but
even
but
though that's not such a good word either.
Yeah. But but you see, but the fact is, you see, since they are influencing, for example, those of my caliber. In other words, let us say this: although this is just my personal observation, it may be right or it may be wrong. When I was going to the yeshiva, the caliber of knowledge of the students was much higher. You had a lot of them who had studied in European yeshivas and so forth. So the caliber of study of knowledge was higher, but their observance was what you would call, what we call dati. They would follow the Shulchan Aruch, but not be extremist. But now, the students that are going there may not be as knowledgeable, but they are to the right. They are to the right of the people that we that were going to the yeshiva when I was there.
Yes, yeah.
And that's because of the influence of these other groups.
Yeah. I look at places like yeshiva as though.
They look askance. Even in the time that I was going there, the Agudas HaRabbanim looked askance at anybody who went to college. But now it's even more so by these in regard to these groups. They look at askance. How can you have a yeshiva with courses in philosophy and dissecting rats in a laboratory?
Yeah, well, you do you want to make a forecast or comment upon the trend?
I think that the trend is going to, this is the trend of the time. I don't know whether it's right or wrong, that Orthodoxy will become more rightist, Reform and Conservative will turn to more to the left. That's again, that's just my prognosis, but I'm not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet.
Yeah, that's smart. A very serious problem between the denominations is the issue of some sort of a common get.
Yeah.
you feel the need? Is there any prospect?
Well, I don't know. There have been, in regard to conversion, there has been some attempts to sort of have a sponsoring body of the three groups with the actual conversion done by the Orthodox. But even this, most of the Orthodox have been opposed to it. It originated from some of the men from my orientation, mm-hmm. but most of them have been opposed to it. Just the idea of taking, and the same would be true about a get, have three groups
simpler.
Working together.
Get is simpler.
If the get were, for example, on the basis of mm-hmm. they would bring the get to an Orthodox tribunal and they would give the get, then it would be simpler. But usually the Reform and Conservative rabbis want to be participants yeah. in it, and that raises a problem from the Orthodox point of view.
Raises a problem for anybody's point,
yeah.
however. You see any prospect of a common get?
There's been talk about it, but right now I don't think there's any definite prospect.
Mm-hmm. Situation in America seems worse than places like France and England, and I don't know about South America. Do you have any feeling for that?
I don't know enough about what's going on in the other places, so I mm-hmm. couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, in England, since they have the example of the Church of England, which is a conservative group, so even the Reform tend to be more conservative than the Reform here. There mm-hmm. they're called liberal.
Liberal, yes.
Yeah, so they tend to be more. In fact, from my observation about the Reform is that many of the Reform in England would be considered conservative in America.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's because of the influence of the Church of England, I would think. And don't forget the chief rabbi that's recognized by the crown is an Orthodox chief rabbi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sociology in every country is so different.
Yeah. But about France and other countries, I don't know. My guess is that the Orthodox, it's just a guess and it's yeah. based on hearsay, that the Orthodox rabbinate is perhaps not as knowledgeable in France as in some of the other countries. But I wouldn't, I don't know. But I couldn't say that that's a fact because I don't know.
Shut that up.
At what?
Sorry. I know that you had a lot of interest and involvement in Zionism and Zionist work. What is the possible role of what I would call current Zionism in a community like Pittsburgh? It's a common interest and activity of a lot of Jews,
mm-hmm.
and it's been the religion of a lot of Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But what can we forecast for that?
Well, insofar as Pittsburgh is concerned, for that matter, all over the United
yeah.
States, Hadassah is going to continue to be a dominant force.
Mm-hmm.
That's the women's Zionist organization.
My wife spent a lifetime with that.
The COA, Zionist Organization of America, is not as strong as it was, let us say, in the pre-state period
mm-hmm.
when you had
mm-hmm.
Rabbi Stephen Weiss
yeah.
and Rabbi Yabba Hillel Silver.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
my
going back a long
and
way.
My wife's uncle,
mm-hmm.
Rabbi Miller. So you don't have that influence, but nevertheless, it will be there. It may not be as strong as some of the other organizations like Bnei B'rith or.
But that's yeah. it. That's what I would call Israel's support, regardless of what we call it.
Yeah.
Because it's an Israel support. Ethnic.
Yeah, but nevertheless, ZOA mm-hmm. more than Hadassah has a definite point of view
mm-hmm.
that they have politically.
Mm-hmm.
Mizrahi in Pittsburgh, although at one time it was strong when mm-hmm. Rabbi Ashinsky was here, But Mizrahi in Pittsburgh is mainly a paper organization. Mizrahi women also have more or less practically have died out. Pioneer women are still a force. Labor Zionists are also not as strong. They used to once be a force, but not anymore. So it's, and at one time you even had a revisionist group here in Pittsburgh, but not anymore. So the three Zionist groups, I believe, that will continue to function here will be the Pittsburgh Zionist District, which is COA, Hadassah, and Pioneer Women. And they also, they work hand in hand. For example, when I was president of the Pittsburgh Zionist Council, and later on when I founded the Pittsburgh Zionist Federation and was president there, I was able to have all of the three groups, and I think it's still prevailing, actually all the groups, because we have Mizrahi representation and labor representation also there, and I was able to get all three groups work very harmoniously together, and if